Hi, everybody. This is Dr. Osborne, the Gluten-Free Warrior, with another podcast episode. And today's special guest is entrepreneur and author Craig Ballantyne. Craig is a fitness and personal development guru from Toronto, Ontario, and the author of The Perfect Day Formula, which is what I'm going to dive in with him today about. And he's contributed to Men's Health magazine. He's got a number of articles that have appeared in Women's Health and Oxygen, GQ, Maxim, National Geographic, Men's Fitness, and Muscle and Fitness, HERS. So he's been around the industry, the fitness industry, for a really long time and very, very successful at it. So today I really want to dive in with him. He's got a new book and a new kit out that helps people transform their lives. And you know, as you know, as listeners to the Gluten-Free Warrior podcast, a big part of transforming your life, not just nutritionally, but there are also a lot of other aspects to that. So without further ado, thank you, Craig, for being here today. I appreciate you taking time.
Well, I really appreciate you having me on the call here, Peter. You've helped me make some transformations in my life, and I'm looking forward to helping your listeners.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the talk. So, you know, I got a copy of your book, and you know, one of the things that as I was reading through it, and it was on page 93, I think, that it was a paragraph, and I loved it because as a doctor, I'm a teacher, but what you say, and I'm going to kind of quote you here, you say, "That's why if your goal is to transform your life in any way, it's helpful to become a mentor to someone else who seeks the same goals. By explaining your new habits, you will better understand their importance. And furthermore, you will become more committed to these new behaviors. As a teacher, you want to maintain integrity and act in a way that is consistent with what you just taught. After all, a hypocrite is a lousy mentor." I love that paragraph because so many people are out there teaching things and not necessarily doing things. In other words, do as I say, but not as I do. Can you kind of dive into that mentor aspect a little bit more? Because a lot of people, you know, they're wrapped up in improving themselves, but they fail to take the lessons that they're using to improve themselves and applying that to other people who might benefit.
Yeah, it's a great question. I'm glad you really like that because it's something that I really like in the book as well. And it's something that I've found through experience over time that the more I taught up on stage, the more I understood what I was teaching and sharing. And the more you teach and have to explain things to somebody, you break it down. So, you know, when I'm breaking down exercises to a beginner, when you're breaking down, you know, gluten and what it is and, you know, the issues that it causes, you have to constantly rethink and put yourself in the beginner's shoes so that you're not talking above their head. And when you do that, you become much better at understanding the information, and you have breakthroughs in your own mind about new ideas, new ways of doing things, better ways of doing what you've been doing in the past. And this is long known. I mean, I'm looking at a quote right now from Seneca, one of the ancient philosophers, and he said, "Welcome those whom you are capable of improving. The process is a mutual one. People learn as they teach." And that's from thousands of years ago. And there's many other quotes like that from philosophers who learn this themselves, that when they go out and they stand on a stage or whether they go one-on-one with somebody and just sit down and coach them through something, that the teacher learns as much, if not more, than the student.
Yeah, I love that. I like to say that as a teacher, we are always perpetual students. Through our teachings, if we're open-minded enough to listen to the students who might teach us.
Absolutely, yeah. You learn so much with the questions that people ask and them looking at the issues through fresh eyes. It's so important. So, you know, whoever's listening, whatever your interest in life is, wherever you want to help people, you know, get out there and coach one-on-one or, you know, volunteer, and you'll just become a better person because of it.
Absolutely, absolutely. So you've got this perfect day formula. I know part of it is a book and part of it is a kit that people can use to just apply in their life. Can you tell us a little bit about how somebody can improve their life using this formula that you've put together?
Yeah, so the formula is based on another philosopher, a Stoic philosopher named Epictetus, and what he taught me through his books was there's a 3C formula for life, which is control what you can, cope with what you can, and concentrate on what counts. And I applied that in three ways to everyone's day. So you control your morning. That's when you have the most control over getting things done, over what time you get up, over what you do first thing in the morning. You really control the meals that you have, and you can control the start of your day, and it's so important. And the next is you cope with what you can't control in the afternoon. I mean, there's a lot of chaos that's brought into our world, you know, emergencies from other people, whether it's family or whether it's coworkers. But we have to learn how to, you know, conquer that chaos and cope with what we can't control. And then the third thing is concentrating on what counts, which is, you know, in the evening time, you need to be really structured during the day so you have all this freedom at night for your family. And so those are the three phases of it. And then for each one of those, there is one specific tool that is going to help people succeed in life. And so for controlling your morning, I teach people to have rules or personal commandments for their life about, you know, their nutrition, about what time they go to bed, what time they get up, about how they act, about how they speak, about their habits. And we just put together a few personal rules for our life that take away the reliance on willpower and discipline and make it so much easier for us just to automatically make the right decisions. So that allows us to have amazing mornings. And then we have what I call the five pillars of success that we use in the afternoon to cope with the chaos of the world. And those five pillars, I'm happy to expand on them later, are planning and preparation, professional accountability, social support, a meaningful incentive, and then the big deadline. And those have been used in my transformation contest by people who lose 30, 40, 50 pounds in 12 weeks. Every single winner of my contest has always had every single one of those pillars in place for their life. And if they didn't, then they were the people who were coming in second. And if they had only one or two of those pillars in place, they would actually drop out after just a few weeks of the 12-week contest. And then finally, the last phase is concentrating on what counts at night, which is really what we're living for, our family, you know, time with them, our hobbies, our health, you know, our well-being. And so if you structure your day and if you conquer the chaos in the afternoon, then you're able to concentrate on what counts at night. And that comes down to writing what I call a vision for your life so that you know what's really important for you and it guides your decisions in life, so that you make the right decisions that move you towards what you believe matters.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, again, coming from a world where all day long, all week long, I'm trying to educate people about diet change, and especially with the gluten-free diet, it's such a, for a lot of people, it's such a mouthful to tackle because they've been used their whole life, they've been ingrained in believing that, you know, cereal is for breakfast and sandwiches are for lunch and pasta is for dinner. And so you're literally having to transform the way they think about food. And I think, you know, what you just said, my most successful patient stories and outcomes actually come from people who apply. It's almost like you've broken it down as the morning there are, it's kind of a more regimented rule system so that you start your day off right without interference. And then in the afternoon, you have a kind of a plan in place to deal with things that might come at you that you don't anticipate, and then at night it's almost like dessert. You've done so well in the morning and the afternoon that now you get to enjoy life as you were intended to be able to do so. But I find that the people who in my, at least in my clinic, that come through to see me that can develop those rules for themselves and their diet, you know, those are the ones that are always the most successful in eradicating autoimmunity.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I'm a client of yours, just like the people that are listening. I mean, I've come to you for guidance on the gluten-free diet and eating and health stuff for, man, I'm going on 4 years now, I think. And I've done exactly what I instruct in the book. You know, one of the things that I think that is invaluable to the people listening who are on a gluten-free diet is being able to conquer the chaos and you know, control what they can't control or cope with what they can't control. And what I mean by that is, you know, people are going to roll their eyes at you and people are going to, you know, try and force food on you that's not right for you. And you have to understand that in many cases they don't mean to upset you. What they mean to do is to, you know, protect their beliefs, and you can't get mad at them. You need to be able to cope with what you can't control, and so that's why those five pillars are there in place, you know, to have that different mindset of looking at, you know, how your mother, like my mother, is always going to try and sneak in something and say, oh, it's not going to kill you, but she doesn't know that, you know, adding soy sauce and stuff like that can really cause a lot of problems, and it does seem so innocuous to people that don't have to deal with it on a daily basis, but you know, that's what the systems in the book allow you to overcome, whether it is, you know, first of all, getting started on your own habits with gluten-free eating, or dealing with the people around you and, you know, dealing with environments like airports where you might be in a situation where it's really tough to find something to tide you over until you can get to a real meal. So it is really helpful for every aspect of your life, but it can be really dialed in for the gluten-free eating crowd.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to quote you again on page 41. You say, creating your rules for living and sticking to them will guide you to a life of success and wisdom. Though no one will ever be perfect at keeping to the rules, you will be better for trying. I love that last sentence. I think a lot of people strive for perfection and then beat themselves up when they don't achieve the impossible. Can you kind of elaborate a little bit on that?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, I'll just use a bit of my own personal experience. So, you know, I have some certain nutrition rules and I'm getting better at them every day. And that's really what all of this is about is, you know, improvements every day. And if you make a mistake, you know, there's nothing you can do about a mistake. You just have to move on and be happy that you learned a lesson and try and improve tomorrow. So, you know, for a while there, a couple of years ago, you know, I would go out with some work people and our business in Denver and, you know, have a couple of drinks and make a bad choice. And, you know, it was like, it would happen once every couple of months. And then I would just slowly over time, I would, you know, look for accountability. I'd look for social support. And I actually got that through my own internet business where I run this transformation contest. I would tell people what I had planned to do. I was going to join them in the contest, and I got social support from people that I've never met who are actually, you know, paying clients of mine. But I was saying to them, listen, if you're going to go through a weight loss transformation, I'm going to go through a dietary transformation alongside you, and you're going to be my support, and I'm going to be your support. And so I used those pillars, and every day I got better, and, you know, there were some fumbles along the way, and they're very few and far between these days, but they still happen every, you know, 4 or 5 months. But otherwise, I'm following your advice and being able to improve my habits just by putting these things in place and having these rules so that I don't have to think about things as much. Because you've probably heard this before, and maybe your listeners have as well, that most people consider willpower to be like a muscle, and that it can be robbed of, you know, it has a certain amount of energy, and then if you use it continuously throughout the day, it gets tired and you no longer have any at night, which is the exact opposite of what we need. We need willpower to be strong at night, and not necessarily in the morning, because most of us don't make bad choices in the morning. Well, it's easy for us to stick to our rules early in the morning, but, you know, when that chocolate cake comes out at night, we don't have the willpower because we've been using it all over the day and it's been depleted. So that's what we need to do, is implement these rules. You know, for example, if you want to eat gluten-free, you would say, or paleo, you would say, I just never eat grains, period. Done, end of story. And the example I actually give in the book and in some of my articles is of a vegan. A vegan never eats meat, end of story. It's not like, you know, they sometimes eat meat or they get drunk and eat meat. They just don't eat meat, period. And so we can all adopt these, you know, mental shifts in our mind to help us make the right decisions. If we say, I'm not the type of person that, you know, gives in and eats grains because I know it is bad for me. That's just a personal rule that I have for living my life.
Yeah, and I love it. I think personal rules, I mean, you realistically, you've got to have personal rules and personal boundaries if you want to succeed, whether it's weight loss or health or whether it's financial success. It doesn't matter. You've got to have rules that keep you on the track to moving toward the direction you're trying to go in.
Yeah, I mean, anybody that obeys the Ten Commandments or stops at a red light already has rules in their life. So if anyone's, you know, scoffing and saying, oh, I don't want to put rules in my life, listen, you're already living by hundreds of rules every day. So adding a couple more that are personal to you are actually going to be beneficial and make you a better person.
I agree, and I think there's a reason why rules are created. I mean, our parents give us structure and boundaries as we're growing up with sets of rules, and even though as kids when we're growing up we might not like them, as we become parents or as we become more mature, we certainly learn to appreciate the value and the profound benefit that they have in our lives, and I think this is just an extension of that.
Yeah, exactly. And I use the phrase in the book that the more structure you have in your life, the more freedom you have in your life, which is something that a lot of people don't understand at first until they think about it. But, you know, we go back and look at the day in the three parts, the morning, the afternoon, and the evening. We want to be free in the evening. And in order to be free in the evening, you have to be structured during the day to get your work done, so that you can leave behind your work and your work email and be truly present with your family at home. And I'm just so impressed by what you've been able to accomplish over the years with that approach. You know, you have such a busy practice. You have all the, you know, gluten-free warrior Facebook stuff and the website, and you're still able to, you know, have a lot of personal time for your family. So I've always been very impressed by that, Peter.
Well, thanks, Craig. I stick to a lot of your advice as well, so I think it's been a really mutual beneficial relationship for the both of us. Now, you struggled early on. You know, you talk about your struggle with anxiety, crippling anxiety, and I'd love to get your take with that, because you talked earlier a moment ago about these five pillars of transformation and, you know, how you use those. How did you use those to overcome the anxiety and just basically become a healthier person?
Yeah, it's a really great question, and it's exactly what I did. I had learned the five pillars through the transformation contest, and when I struggle with anxiety, which is over 10 years now. It's actually the anniversary is around 10 years ago next month when I really struggled with it. And so what happened was, I don't know why it started, but you know, it's just like, if anybody's ever dealt with this, you feel like you have the symptoms of a heart attack. And so I had tingling from the top of my head all the way down to my fingertips. I couldn't breathe properly. You know, it's very shallow breath. And, you know, this went on for like 24/7 for 6 weeks. So it was very strange. And I went to the hospital twice for it. But what allowed me to overcome it was better planning and preparation. And that meant, you know, I was eating very well 80% of the time, but, you know, some days I'd have some caffeine, which does not agree with me and made me more anxious. So I had to plan and avoid having caffeine. I had to plan to get better night's sleep. I had to plan so that I eliminated, you know, excess sugar from my diet, which, you know, is just not helpful. And I had to plan to stop drinking as much as I did. I was one of those guys who went out with his buddies on Saturday night and drank a few, and then, you know, that probably contributed to it. So I had to plan to avoid that stuff. And so that was pillar number one. Pillar number two was getting professional accountability. And I actually had a couple of professional accountability people at this time. I hired a yoga instructor. I hired a Qigong instructor, which is like standing meditation, kind of like Tai Chi. And I also had a business coach. And so I was checking in with these people regularly and doing my work and, you know, doing my sessions with them. And that was helpful. And then the third thing was social support. So I had some friends who had gone through anxiety, and I used them as my social support. I would say social support differs from professional accountability in that professional accountability is like having a coach, whereas social support is like having cheerleaders on your side. So the cheerleaders will say, you know, way to go, keep it going, but they're not going to kick your butt and say, hey, listen, you didn't do what you said you were going to do, or they're not going to give you expert advice, but they'll be there to support you. So those are the second and third pillars. And then the fourth pillar was a meaningful incentive. And in some cases, you need a meaningful incentive to get started. Like, you know, if you want to lose weight and fit back into some jeans, you say, if I lose 2 inches, I'm going to buy myself a, you know, a nice $100 pair of jeans. for me, I didn't need a meaningful incentive outside of the fact that I wanted to stop feeling like I was having a heart attack every day. So that was a meaningful incentive enough to me. And then finally, the deadline. You know, there was no deadline for stopping the anxiety. It was just as soon as possible. But I did have a deadline with my business coach. We were setting up to release a new product, and so there was a deadline there, and I needed to be 100% healthy by that product launch time. And so it all worked out, and eventually I just got to the point where I was reading a book called Panic Away, and it just, you know, in chapter two, it just said five words that almost fixed me immediately. It just said, there's nothing wrong with you. And what they meant was there's nothing wrong with you physically. And I had just gotten back from the doctor. Again, they had given me a 24-hour heart rate monitor and said, listen, if there's any problems, we'll call you. They never called. The book said there's nothing wrong with me. And I just said, listen, I'm doing all this stuff right. I don't have time for this. And it really, like, for some reason, that mindset shift allowed me to overcome it. I had some flare-ups a couple months after, but I learned how to breathe better through the yoga and the Qigong. I started meditating, and, you know, up to this day, unless I have – I still avoid a lot of caffeine, but unless I have a little bit of caffeine, I don't ever feel any of those symptoms, and it's really been a relief. It's, you know, going on 10 years now. But I use the pillars that I recommend to help get me through a tough time.
Well, you know, in that there toward the end, it sounded a lot like a big part of it for you was, you know, was just getting it in your head that, you know, that it was okay and that there was nothing physically wrong. And once your mind was allowed to accept that, you really were able to overcome and accomplish that.
Yeah, it's funny, you know, it's funny. Well, it's easy for me to say funny now, but if anybody has ever dealt with it, the interesting thing is when I try to, like sometimes, some days I would just go, I'm going to try and make this worse. And when I tried to make the panic attack worse or the anxiety worse, it actually got better. It was really weird. So it is, for me, it was a combination of physical and mental anxiety. And I was able to, you know, I must have just had obviously a small case of it. It's not something severe and that many other people might go through. So obviously they need professional help, but when I tried to make it worse, it actually made it better. It was kind of funny.
Well, I think even if we apply that, I see this a lot in people who go gluten-free, and what happens is invariably they end up wanting to go and travel or wanting to go and do. And so then there's almost like what you experience, there's this anxiety or fear or panic that they may get cross contamination or that they may get exposure to gluten. And I think sometimes and there are some people that, you know, even small quantities can really damage their health. But those people, and at least in my experience, are more rare. The people generally can work themselves up more, and so the anxiety becomes more damaging than the risk of cross contamination exposure. And so just being able to kind of get their mind wrapped around, you know, the process of one of the rules, but two, how are you going to travel with success? And as you said, cope, learn how to cope with the things that you can't control. I think those are important, just extremely important life lessons that if a person can take advantage of those, they can, and wrap their mind around them, they can have a lot less anxiety and a lot less strife over the diet change or whatever other thing in their life it is that they're dealing with.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've traveled all over the world, to Japan, to Italy, to Germany, since, you know, realizing that I need to avoid gluten. And, you know, being in airports, and you never know exactly what you're getting. And I travel with a lot of my own food, but sometimes some things happen and you never know. And it's, and you can really mess yourself up mentally if you just are always worried about the littlest thing. And so it goes for everything. And, you know, I was just, you know, working with a client right now who really wants to stop eating at 7, but he finds that he does really, really great work, what I call magic time in the book, up until 7 o'clock. And then he was stressing out, like, how do I stop eating at 7 if I work till 7? And it was like, hey, we can't have you like this. This is only going to make things worse. it's okay if you eat a little something after 7. Just don't eat a heavy meal within an hour and a half or 2 hours of bedtime, because it'll, you know, it won't be helpful to your sleep. But other than that, it's okay. You don't, it's helpful to set rules, but it's not helpful to set rules that are just going to, you know, really mess with your mind. So there is a balance there in creating the boundaries for your life, but also being willing to understand that sometimes you might need to stretch those boundaries or change those boundaries, or, you know, not every day you'll be able to stick to them, but you do the best that you can.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things that you say in the book, you talk about, you know, concentrating on what counts. And I think this is a kind of a perfect kind of roll into that. How does somebody kind of evaluate or know what counts for them? And how does somebody create that vision of what counts to improve their life?
Yeah, this is my favorite part of the book, to be honest with you, Peter. It's the vision creation session, which is the third and final component. And I walk people through dozens of questions in the book and in the kit about how to create the vision for their life, about what really matters. And it's narrowing that down. You know, it's interesting. Once you understand what matters in your life, then it kind of becomes this weird question, like, what do you mean you don't know what matters in your life? But at one point, we all really didn't know, you know, as we grow up and mature. But eventually, we get to the point where you can ask yourself these questions about, you know, what matters to you in career, what matters to you in health, what matters to you in family, where do you see yourself in a couple of years, you know, what would be the perfect life that you're living, the perfect day that you're living, what legacy do you want to leave behind for your family, for your career, you know. Essentially, the question is, what are you doing all this stuff that you're doing? What are you doing it for? You know, what are you getting in the car and sitting in a 90-minute commute for? Like, is it really worth it? Is it really worth driving 50 miles to work? Is it really worth, you know, sacrificing your health to eat at Wendy's at lunchtime because you're so busy? Is it really worth it? And then, you know, just stepping back, and I use the phrase, you need to objectively look at your life as if you were stepping out of your body for a minute and watching your life as a movie, and, you know, watching your life as if it was somebody else and saying, well, why is that person doing that? You know, why would they be drinking, you know, 6 Budweisers on a Friday night when they should be getting sleep? Why are they doing that? And if you look at your life like that, then you can make better decisions. You can identify what matters to you, and you can adjust your life so that you then focus on what matters. You concentrate on what counts. You identify those things, whether it's family, whether it's career, whatever it is, and you focus on it. And I really believe that everyone has what I call seasons in life. So, you know, if right now, if you're a newlywed with, you know, a kiddo on the way, you're truly in a season of family, and family is your number one thing. Maybe in 5 years from now, when the kid's in school and everything's settled down, you'll be in a season of career. Or you'll be in a season of health. You know, maybe you need to lose the weight that you gained after you had your kiddo, you know, man or woman. And so everyone goes through these seasons where there's a different focus, and being able to identify that and realize that helps people make the right decisions for their life.
I think that's wonderful. I obviously, you know, I think anybody would be able to benefit from objectifying what it is that they're actually doing, and then analyzing that, and then trying to kind of improve upon it. I wish when we were going through school as a kid that we would have had a class, you know, some kind of a success-based class, or a teacher that would have kind of laid that type of lesson out. As I think so many adults in today's world, they do come around to learning these kinds of things, a lot of them through mistakes, a lot of them through just self-analysis. But I think if it could be taught earlier on, I think so many people could be saved from the grief and the strife that they put into their own lives because there are a lot of reasons why. One of the commercial influences, one of the things you said is that I really liked, is why are you in that commute for 90 minutes a day? There was an interview I was listening to last week, and the guy said, you know, so many people work so hard to achieve the stuff in their life, and then they end up owning a lot of stuff. But he says, in reality, this stuff is actually what owns them. And it kind of really sunk with me, because I think a lot of people get into that. They're working so they can afford a house outside of the city, but then they have to commute. So then they have to buy a car. And so then they have to, you know, so it's just this vicious cycle. And at the end of the day, you ask, what is it all for if you can't get to the things that matter most? Which is, you know, the way you describe it is that, you know, you work hard in the day and you learn to adapt, but then you also have this reward, which is, you know, to be able to do the things in your life that you want to do with the people you want to do them with.
Yeah, and you and I share a mentor, Bedros Koulian, and he's very much like you. He's very busy, but he has children, and he gets home in time for dinner, and he plays guitar with his son, and then after dinner he plays ping pong with his son. He has these little daily rituals that are really just fantastic. And what I've found over the years through my readings of philosophy is that, and through, there's a lot of books out now about happiness, and what really brings happiness and satisfaction and fulfillment to people is experiences and other people. And so really what we should be focusing on, it doesn't have to be expensive experiences. I mean, certainly some of the greatest times I've ever had are, you know, playing catch with my father and, you know, when I was younger, and then driving my father around when he was older, looking at cornfields. These were, you know, some of the greatest times of my life, just because I was with somebody I loved and it was a great experience. And so that's what we need to be focusing on rather than that stuff. You know, that was something 10 or 15 years ago when people had that obnoxious bumper sticker that he who dies with the most toys wins. And that's not true at all. I mean, that's the wrong way of looking at things. And that's, you know, gotten many of our countries in trouble and many of our families in trouble. So, you know, the looking at your life objectively thing, I've learned it, you know, through two sources. I think you can find that type of wisdom in the Bible. And then also a book that I read one page from every day. It's called The Art of Living, and it is the classical manual on virtue, happiness, and effectiveness, and it's a translation of Epictetus and his teachings by a woman named Sharon LaBelle, and I just love the book. It's really helpful. It's really helped shape my thinking, and if people are looking for some type of inspirational read on a daily basis, they'll get a lot out of that.
You know, that's great. I'm gonna check that book out, Art of Living. Well, been good. Yeah,
I think read one lesson from it every day.
A little lesson every day, and I think sometimes that's the best way to that's the best way to approach it, so you don't feel overwhelmed.
That's right.
So Craig, I know you're in a lot of places online. You do a lot. You're a busy guy. Where can people find you and your programs and your new book?
For the new book, they should check out perfectdayformula.com. That'll get them the book kit. We also have it on Amazon, of course. And then every week on Mondays, I write a philosophical essay about success and improving your life at my website, earlytorise.com. And we actually publish an essay like that every day, but I write the one on Mondays. And then if people are on Facebook and looking for fitness and transformation advice, they can find me at turbulencetrainingfanpage.com, which is our biggest Facebook presence. And we have lots of advice on cooking and yoga and bodyweight exercises on there to help people transform.
Excellent, excellent. I'm going to put those underneath this audio in the show notes for any of you who want to go check out Craig and all the different wonderful things that he and his team have put together to help people. Well, this has been great. I think very enlightening, and I hope very helpful for a lot of our gluten-free warrior audience who are, you know, gluten-free at this point and just looking for other additional ways on how they can improve their life and structure their life in a manner that's consistent with good health and happiness. So I want to just say thank you very much, Craig, for being with us today and enlightening us.
Yeah, thanks so much, Peter. Those are great questions, and I always enjoy talking to you and get inspired by everything that you're doing. So thank you, and thank you to the listeners. I know you have so many great followers and fans, and you know, I check out your articles, and I love seeing their comments underneath and the experiences they've had with your advice.
Yeah, Craig, well, thank you, and yeah, we'll be in touch real soon. So take care until then.